We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time. And now the second part of the podcast, covering the Central Division. Enjoy.
So, the Chicago Bulls essentially had, I don't know, probably the strangest offseason of almost any team in the league, and maybe the Heat outstripped them, but same reason, basically. So the Chicago Bulls, they lost Aaron Brooks, Pau Gasol, Etuan Moore, Joakim Noah. They traded away Dunleavy and Calderon and Derrick Rose and Justin Holiday. And in replacement, they brought in Denzel Valentine, Rajon Rondo, Dwayne Wade, Robin Lopez, and players like Jerian Grant and Isaiah Kanan and Spencer Dinwiddie, who are at the back end of the rotation. That's a lot of movement. That's a lot of major pieces leaving this team, moving out. Are you high or low, just in general, on the current Chicago Bulls roster?
It's so weird because I would say individually there's a nice number of players that I like on this team. I'd say I'd like anywhere between 8 and 10 guys on this team, but the assortment and the collection of them, I don't like, don't get, and I find myself feeling bad for Fred Hoiberg. You know that I loved him, and he's probably going to flame out in a year or two, and people are going to say, oh, there's another college coach who can't do it. I truly believe he can. I just think he's been put in the worst situation. And if you were to construct a lineup that was Fred Hoiberg's nightmare, this would be it. He wants tough-minded, defensive, humble guards, a bunch of guys getting out and running, and, you know, shooters above all. He has none of that on this team. I think it's a disaster.
So, rattling off the depth just really quick so everybody hears it. Rajon Rondo, Dwayne Wade, Jimmy Butler, Gibson, or Mirotic. I'm not sure who's going to be starting at power forward. And then Lopez at center. Then the backups are Bobby Portis, Doug McDermott, Denzel Valentine, Tony Snell. And I guess, do you think Jerian Grant's a good enough basketball player to be a backup?
Him or...
And I know they loved Felicio, Cristiano Felicio, last year at the end of the season.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Dinwiddie, Grant, or Cannon, one of them will emerge, especially with Valentine being able to take some of the ball handling off of a guard. I wouldn't be surprised if Cannon or Dinwiddie, you know, did really good in that role. So, yeah, like, there's, other than Rajon Rondo, pretty much every one of those guys you named, I like as an NBA player in the right role.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to look through here and who would I say no to, and I don't think I would say no to anyone.
Yeah, Rondo would be the only one for me.
Yeah. So, and here's the question. If there is two above league average 3-point shooters on this team, who would you think they would be this year? You have to name two. There has to be at least two.
McDermott for one, definitely.
Yeah.
I would say maybe Rondo could get Tony Snell open look, so he would be my second.
Yeah. I mean, I'm struggling seeing Valentine. I mean, he was pretty good in college, but he's going to have a harder time now.
Yeah, he's not a pure shooter by any means.
And Butler's been up and down his career, too. Sometimes he's above it, sometimes he's below it. He's not great. Could Mirotić be at above it? Like, he was pretty poor shooting last year.
And he's taken so, like, he had such a versatile game, and last year he just became he thought he was Ryan Anderson.
Yeah.
But he's obviously a lot tougher. He could do a lot more things. And he just wants to be a pure stretch four and not utilize all the other clever parts of his game. I mean, there's some lineups that I think could be interesting here. It's just you have too much ego and too much pride. Like, the clear first thing you've got to do, again, if this is NBA 2K17 and you shut the chemistry part off or whatever, the clear thing you've got to do is bring either Rondo or Wade off the bench.
Yeah,
like, that's just common sense. But they won't. But you have.
Right.
But you have to.
Wouldn't you just have them each one be the point guard while you're playing?
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. To me, I would probably bring Wade off the bench. I would probably start Rondo, Tony Snell, Jimmy Butler, Mirotić, and Lopez. That would give me enough shooting. I have my shooting guard, small forward, and power forward. All could be average to above average 3-point shooters if Rondo's getting them open looks, and Robin Lopez could hit the mid-range shot. It's good enough defensively. Like, that would probably be my starting lineup, and Wade would just be a force off the bench with Taj Gibson, McDermott. And then, yeah, Wade would handle the ball the most, but I could put him out there with Valentine. I could put him out there with, you know, Cannon if I wanted a faster lineup, but you could create some good lineups if you just made that one big move.
Yeah. Yeah, but do you think there's any chance in hell that Dwayne Wade, who was insulted, absolutely insulted by a $50 million deal this offseason, that there's any chance he would accept a role off the bench?
No, and I think they're going to try to do it first with Rondo. That's going to go really bad. Then they're going to be looking to trade him and finding no takers. I think that's probably going to be how it plays out.
I just don't understand how, even before they knew they had a chance at Wade, like, why did they think Rondo was the right answer for this team?
Especially, I mean, they let Etuan Moore walk.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, If they would have matched that deal or gone, probably just all they had to do is match or come close, he's on Chicago, and yet instead they go give more money to Rondo. Like, it's just stupid.
So in a vacuum, you think Moore is a better player than Rondo now?
Yeah, I would say for 25 out of 30 teams, they would be helped by more than Rondo. I guess there's some teams, like, if Chris Paul went down, or if he just left the Clippers, Rondo would help the Clippers more than Moore would, because they would need that kind of facilitator. But for most teams, Moore is going to provide more overall value than a guy who just has the ball in his hands all the time but can't shoot in this NBA. He's basically Rubio without the defense. And
yeah.
So.
Yeah, he used to have the defense, but not anymore.
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, the rotations could shake out. Like, if I told you that this team was league average defensively, do you see a way? Does that would that make sense to you? Do you see a way for them to get to league average defensively?
I think they could, because they could be a great rebounding team. Gibson, really good rebounder. Lopez isn't great, but he boxes out guys and he's good enough. Rondo and Wade are two great guard rebounds. So I think they could end possessions, which is a very important part of defense. So, yeah, I could see a way. Bobby Portis is a great rebounder. Just because they have the rebounding, I think that they could possibly be a league average defense.
Okay. All right, so we're not going to talk about what they won last year and what their changes in, because that's your pet peeve. So make your predictions. What is the offense and defensive rating? Where do they fall amongst the rest of the league?
I would say 22nd in offense and 20th in defense.
Wow, you really hate them, in other words.
I like a lot of their players. I hate the fit, and especially the way that they're going to have to play because of the egos, yeah.
Yeah. I'm actually going a little lower offensive. I would expect them to be 25 offensive. I have a feeling that they're going to eke out like a 17 on the defensive end, but that's the best I can get.
Yeah.
All right. So we're probably predicting, you know, with stats like that, you're talking about a team that wins like 32 wins.
32 to 34, yeah.
Okay.
For the
Is there any chance Dwayne Wade is on this team next year, if that's the case?
I mean, I don't know if he's going to go to a third team, and then he's probably not going to go to Miami. I think he might just go out. I don't think he's chasing championships, so yeah, he might just go out in his hometown and do it like Kobe did it, little farewell tour.
So essentially we get the Kobe tour out of Chicago. That is so pathetic. I'm sorry.
I mean, the guy won a bunch of titles. What does he have to go chasing more for?
Yeah, I know, but it's just... Chicago, just like 4 years ago, was a promising team, and now they're just a train wreck.
Yeah, I still think they've got the coach. I think they've got some nice players. I don't understand what they did this offseason. I don't get it. I mean, they won that Derrick Rose trade. Like, they started off the offseason good. They didn't go and overpay Noah. Like, they're right there, and then they go give, what, $40 million to Rondo and Wade? They just blew it.
Just burning a hole in the pocket.
Yeah, they made a nice draft pick. I know we both liked Valentine. I even, you know, Paul Zipser's a nice little second-round pick. Like, they made some nice stuff. Bobby Portis was on the come-up. They found Felicio, like, out of nowhere. Had a lot of nice pieces, and then they just had to go and ruin it, so...
All right, my game for you, like always, and I'm going to mention this. I'm going to go third highest paid, because I think it's pretty obvious who the first and second are on this team. So who is the third highest paid player on this team?
So I would say Wade and Butler are in some order, one and two. I forget what Butler or what Wade got. I'm going to guess Robin Lopez.
You are incorrect, sir.
Mm.
Robin Lopez is making less money than Rajon Rondo.
Yeah, what did they give him, like, 2 for 30? What did they give Rondo?
They gave, 2 for 30. $14 million first year, $16 million next year is the estimate.
What's Robin Lopez getting?
$13 million this year.
Oh, Rajon.
And Jimmy's making $17 on his mini-max. And Dwayne Wade, he got $57 million over 2 years, so this one's going to be around 23 or 24.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you? Okay.
Do you think Dwayne Wade, at this point, from what you've seen from Dwayne Wade, is he worth $20 million a year?
I think he would have been to the Heat just for box office purposes. I don't think, if you're just talking about on-court value, I don't think he could ever return that to you, just because I don't think he's ever going to play more than 65 productive games again. And he's probably going to start becoming what we saw Paul Pierce become late in his career, where he's kind of just biding his time for the playoffs. But I don't know if he makes it here in Chicago. So.
Yeah, I mean, Wade is a like, if you actually look at his numbers last year, he's actually in pretty sharp decline. So he may not even be a guy who's worth $15 million next year.
Yeah, but then
as far as on-court production,
the playoffs come around and he's...
And he does pick it up.
Yeah, yeah.
The year before he didn't, though, so...
Yeah, no, I mean, he's not a player for the marathon, but if you could get him in the playoff stretch, you'd take him.
Okay. All right, next team on our list is the Cleveland Cavaliers. Mm. Very exciting team. They won the... I still am kind of flummoxed by the fact that they won the title last year.
Yeah.
So their moves, as you'd expect, are not very much. They lost Timofey Mozgov to the Lakers. I don't know if you really term that a loss. Matthew Dellavedova, which is a loss. He ran away. And then Shashakun, they traded him for... They had to trade away stuff to get him off the roster. And instead, they brought in Mike Dunleavy from the Bulls, who we just talked about. And they signed Chris Anderson and Jordan McRae. And they still haven't signed J.R. Smith yet.
Nope.
And they brought back their boys, Richard Jefferson and James Jones. I guess they did also lose Mo Williams because end of last week, he decided he was going to retire.
Which opens,
so farewell, Williams.
Opens up the spot for Norris Cole.
Good God. Oh. So, Cleveland Cavaliers, their depth is essentially the same as it was last year. Kyrie Irving, I'm assuming this J.R. Smith thing will go down to the wire. It wouldn't shock me if it actually went into the season a little bit, but they're going to sign him at some point for a very favorable contract for him. So it's going to be Irving, J.R. Smith, Richard Jefferson, Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson, because LeBron James isn't going to play. And then off the bench, McRae, Jones, Fry, and I guess Chris Anderson's their backup center now? Mm-hmm. That's crazy. Burtman Anderson's their backup center. Is this team really turning into Tristan Thompson and Kevin Love at center? With LeBron James at power forward a lot?
A little Channing Frye, but yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. My big question from this team is, because we know it's going to happen eventually, what would you put the percentage chance that this is the year that Kyrie Irving becomes the leading scorer for the Cleveland Cavaliers?
How old is he now?
Pretty big gap last year, but... We would say there's at least a chance.
I would say there's a 35% chance he becomes the leading scorer this year.
Wow.
Well, no, because this is going to be his year. This is his peak years, right around 24, 25 for a guard. I'm actually going to go up to 60%. I think LeBron will act. They've already started saying that one of the major things they want to do this year is limit LeBron's minutes a lot more than they did last year. So if LeBron's only playing 30 minutes a game and Kyrie Irving continues to get 32, 33, 34, it's not going to be that shocking if he's going to be the leading scorer.
I mean, that's a massive shift. I mean, that's 5 points per game that all of a sudden has
yeah,
to
but
make that up and then surpass
Shaq
it.
Shaq Kobe, like in Shaq's last year in L.A., Kobe passed him at points per game.
And you think that that's where LeBron is in his career and that Kyrie could ever be, I mean... That's
no,
a pretty
but I
drastic
think,
comparison.
I think LeBron is more willing to let that happen than Shaq was.
Yeah, I mean, what about just from the efficiency? I mean, if both of them are going to score, let's say they're both going to score 24 points per game, LeBron could do that on, what, 14 field goal attempts? How many is it going to take? I mean, Kyrie Irving's going to have to get a lot more shots than Kyrie or than LeBron to average more
That's
points
true.
Per game, right?
And last year Kyrie actually didn't shoot. I mean, one of the things you got to remember though, like Kyrie was way, way below his league average or his career average at 3-point shooting. So, you know, even if he goes back to his basic like 38%, he's going to pick up a little bit there because he takes off more than 5 a game. I think. I guess he was making 5. He took 5 last year. I don't know. I think that it's not that it wouldn't be that surprising if
yeah.
Irving there.
No, it was close in the playoffs. In the playoffs, LeBron was at 26, Kyrie was at 25, and they did it on about the same number of shots. The reason was because obviously Kyrie was far more efficient from behind the arc, and he's a better free throw shooter. So, you know, even though LeBron is always going to shoot far better from two than Kyrie. Kyrie could make it up in some other areas. So, yeah, I guess it's possible.
What percentage are you going to get?
Playoffs for 36 minutes. Kyrie actually averaged more points per game than LeBron. I wouldn't have guessed that. I would say
you know, Irving had a couple 41-point games in a row, didn't he? He was lighting it
the
up.
The thing that's hard with surpassing LeBron is that LeBron is never going to have a 6 or 8 point game. So, sure. Kyrie has those big ones. He also has some stinkers. LeBron is never going to have a stink. So, just over the course of 82 games, keeping up your average is going to be hard, keeping up with LeBron. So, I would say 25%. This is the reason why. I think it's far more likely that Kyrie gets hurt than LeBron. And when Kyrie's hurt, LeBron is going to have to score a lot more in those situations, which will spike his average. If you were to tell me that both guys were going to play 75, 80 games, I would say slightly Kyrie. But just because I think Kyrie gets hurt every year, and it's going to happen again, and LeBron's going to be playing 35, 38 minutes in games where Kyrie's out and going to have to score 30 to 40 points, more than Kyrie is going to be playing with LeBron out and having to do the same thing. That's just why I give the edge to LeBron. But if Kyrie could stay healthy, I think he has a good shot.
Okay. Do you see any chance of major decline from this team?
No, because even like when you see teams getting kind of apathetic in the regular season, like this could be like Kyrie could be going for MVP this year. Kevin Love still has a ton to prove. Same with Tristan Thompson. Like they still have, even though they're coming off of a title, they still seem like they have guys who have a chip on their shoulder or some form of motivation. You know, that has them going to be really hungry over the course of the season. So I don't see them declining in the regular season or the postseason. How about you?
No, there's enough youth on this team that even if – and LeBron's only 31. Like, it's not like he's actually out of his prime. That's the thing. Primes go – like, for players of his ilk usually last until, like, age 33 before they even start to see any, like – decline that could impact them.
But hold,
like,
before you finish that, isn't that kind of unfair? Shouldn't we go off of minutes and not just raw age? Because there was guys who were coming in the league at 23, and then, you know, nobody has the minutes that LeBron had. I mean, the guy goes to the playoffs every year, goes deep every year.
I'm not actually 100% convinced of that, because, like, Kobe Bryant, he was straight out of high school. Kevin Garnett was straight out of high school. Like, there are plenty of superstar players who played extremely well with a ton of minutes until they were 33 and 34. And, you know, so I'm thinking LeBron James is probably going to play that way until he's 33. I don't think that's all that shocking.
I mean, Kobe declined age-wise far earlier than Jordan, didn't he?
Earlier than Jordan, yeah.
But
only like a year or two earlier. It wasn't like a dramatic difference.
Well, but I'm saying, but if we looked at their decline, it would probably be right about at a minutes quotient as opposed to an age quotient.
Okay.
And I mean, LeBron is, he's coming up on 40,000 minutes, you know, between, he's only been in the league 9 years, but he's pretty much at 40,000 minutes. So I don't expect LeBron to fall off because he's a freak of nature and he'll be different than everybody else. I just think moving forward, I don't know if we should use age.
Did you just say LeBron's only been in the league 9 years? He's got to be in longer than that. If he came in straight out of high school, he's 31.
Oh, sorry. I mean, he's been in Cleveland 9 years. Yeah, he's been in the league.
Okay.
Sorry, he's been in the league 13 total. But, yeah,
okay.
9 years in Cleveland.
40,000 minutes is like one of those thresholds where it gets kind of – there's not a lot of players who even get close to that.
And he's going to pass that at about the All-Star break this season.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, just something to watch out for. He's going deep in the playoffs every – like, when was the last time – he didn't make the NBA Finals. It would be 2009-2010, right?
Yep.
And every single year after that, he's playing in 20-some-odd postseason games. So, I mean, he's a freak of nature. I just think moving forward that maybe those rules of the age, we might want to look into years played or minutes played or something like that.
Okay. So what do you think in their offensive and defensive efficiencies are? Both top five? Both top 10?
Yeah, I would say offensive 3, defensive somewhere between 6 and or 5 and 8.
Okay. Yeah, that's exactly what I would have said. You nailed it exactly. So,
Who's the team that with one pulls one magic move out of the hat that could actually, we could be going into the Eastern Conference Finals with the Cavs pretty much healthy and say, this is a series that could go either way?
Only Boston.
And what would they need to add?
They would need to do something like get Chris Paul. They'd have to get a superstar with their assets.
But why did you pick Chris Paul? What?
Just because I could see that happening. Let's say something goes wrong in Clipperland. They have all those decisions to make. This offseason, Griffin and Paul are both going to be free agents, completely free. They can do whatever they want. So if you're the Clippers and suddenly something goes wrong, your team is struggling mightily, you need to cut bait because you're not probably going to keep those guys. So would it shock you if Paul ended up in Celtic land? Or?
No, I'm just trying to figure out how he helps them be Cleveland. Like, is that the type of player that you would?
That's the type of and Paul is just, I feel like, one of the most likely to move. So, I mean, I'm not saying that Chris Paul, Al Horford, and the rest of that pretty awesome squad is going to necessarily be better than the Cleveland Cavaliers. Maybe, but probably not. But at least that's the kind of, like, that's the only team I can think of that not only would have a strong enough roster after a trade like that, but have the juice to make a trade like that even. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
I look at all the rest, like, Toronto's a fine team, but I can't figure out how they could push this, the Cavaliers at all. Like trade someone, DeMar DeRozan for somebody, but. Who's going to take DeMar DeRozan with that contract?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it'll be tough. I don't know what a team would need to add. I don't even know the Celtics would be the team that would beat them, but I can't come up with somebody who would. I actually like the way the Pistons played them last
year. I was about to say that if Detroit could swing for a deadly Rashard Lewis-esque type player for them, then they could stretch them out in bombs away, and if they get lucky in a couple shooting games, they could take out the Cavaliers. But the Cavaliers, like, that's the thing, is like we say get lucky in a bunch of shooting games when we're talking about like Detroit. The Cavaliers are one of the best three-point shooting teams of all time. They were amazing last year.
Yeah.
So like, they're just as likely to bury you in a bunch of games from three. So
how about this one? The Detroit Pistons, after he's released, but he does pass a physical, Chris Bosh joins the Detroit Pistons.
So Drummond, Bosh, Reggie, I still don't think they have the guns at guard, but that's an interesting team.
Yeah, they would have a lot of different bodies to throw at LeBron. They would have a lot of guys who could really embarrass Kevin Love on that side of the court.
Yeah. And Stan Mikita's a very, very good coach. So.
Yeah, no, I don't know. But, yeah, it's just kind of, it's all empty.
You're really intrigued with where Bosch is going to go, aren't you?
I'm really intrigued by how the whole situation plays out because it just doesn't feel right on a lot of levels. I think he will play NBA basketball again, so.
Okay.
We'll see, but it's just kind of, it's all anticlimactic. It just, you know, it's going to be the Cavs season again in the Eastern Conference, and it is what it is. I just, when does it end? I mean, how many more straight years do you think LeBron makes the NBA Finals?
Uh, probably three.
That's crazy. That's crazy that nobody's been able to luck into or do something to be able to beat this man in this kind. I mean, you have 14 teams. You would think that over the span, somebody would have done been able to build something.
Part of that's because he's a brilliant GM.
I know. The Cavs have made so many mistakes, and they're still the clear favorite.
Yeah. So let me ask you this question. Let's say LeBron James plays this year, and he decides he wants to go be a mega millionaire businessman, and he's done playing NBA basketball. Just flat out ends his career after the season, which I don't think is going to happen, but if he did. Are there three people in the history of the NBA that you would take their careers over what LeBron James has posted so far?
Their career. So this is something I think about
their whole career.
This is something I think about a lot. So you're talking about longevity, right?
I'm talking about their career as a whole. And I mean, you can say Bill Russell, but I mean, he has to come and play in today's basketball. So whatever, I think that'd be a really dumb decision, but right. So just, you're going to get them for, you know, the next whatever career.
So I draft them tomorrow and they're going to give me the same career that they just gave.
Yes.
So Jordan, obviously,
I'd still take Magic. And that'd be
Me. I think this will be – I was talking about this with the guy the other night. I think Magic Johnson would be a league-average point guard.
Okay.
In this
I'm not going to get into that argument because I think you're nuts. But I don't think you would even play point guard actually in this
I NBA, grew but. Up the biggest Lakers fan in the world. Magic Johnson – actually, Byron Scott was my favorite player, but I loved Magic, hated Worthy. But I just don't buy it. But – that's crossing eras too, which is also a hard thing. But Jordan, and now the only other one I would make an argument for, it would be a couple of big guys like Akeem or Duncan.
Shaq.
No, because Shaq tailed off.
Okay.
You know, but see, that's the other thing that I don't agree with so much. You know, to me, all of that is kind of circumstance, and I guess it's a skill to play that long and that well, but if you're telling me I could go have the best version of Larry Bird and the best version, so I find them on their best day that they've ever played, and I go and pull that guy from each scenario, and I could have the best version of Larry Bird ever and the best version of LeBron, and then they play that way for the next 12 years, I would take Larry Bird.
Okay.
So there would be a couple guys in that scenario I would take. But as far as longevity, only Jordan, and then everybody else would be debatable.
My list had Jordan and Duncan on it.
Yeah.
And Duncan purely because I made LeBron James retire. Because if LeBron James keeps going and plays like 3 years from now is still playing 80% of what he's doing right now, which is feasible. Like Jordan, he's going to be pushing Jordan pretty soon, to be real. Like Jordan didn't have that long of a career.
Yeah, but, I mean,
there's no way you can say that you would rather have 12 years of Jordan or 18 years of LeBron at this point.
Oh, like, definitely I would. I would get more titles out of 12 years of Jordan than 18 years out of LeBron. No doubt in my mind. Like, as good as LeBron is and as much I respect him, I think he's more the Peyton Manning of the NBA, where that guy is going to ensure that you win 50 to 60 games a year. He's going to get you through the whatever. But, like, Jordan went through some real teams in the Eastern Conference to get to the finals. You put LeBron in the same prime of his career in the Western Conference, how many finals do you think he's gotten to in the last 6 years? Let's say you replace the Cavs, you flop out the Cavs and Dallas Mavericks, fine. Flop out the Cavs and also obviously the Heat and the Dallas Mavericks. How many finals would the Heat have gotten, or would LeBron have gotten to over these last 6 years?
Yeah, a lot fewer.
So I still... When there's 3 minutes left in a close game, I know Jordan is going to win that game for me 98 out of 100 times. LeBron's going to win it for me, 65 out of 100. He's going to do, I mean, he has a couple of games like the Detroit game that we all remember, but he's had way more failures in fourth quarters of those tight big games than he's had successes. And with Jordan, it would be the opposite. You would be hard pressed to remember the failures.
Okay. So. All right. Who is the third highest paid player on the Cleveland Cavaliers?
Love? Kyrie. No. Kyrie.
Yep, it's Kyrie. Yep, and close behind him is Tristan Thompson.
Oh, that's right. LeBron's got a piece of that.
Yeah, well, J.R. Smith, you don't know where he's going to land, but he's also part of that that same agency.
I mean, anything they pay him, they're basically paying him double, right? So
yeah.
Tax, or maybe even more than that.
Yeah, and from what I understand, they have like something like a $13 million deal on the table for like 3 years.
13 per?
Yeah.
Oh, that's nuts.
But, well, apparently the counter is the starting shooting guards that were signed this year are averaging $15 million a year.
Yeah, but they all wear shirts. They need money to cover their clothing.
Yeah, but, you know, J.R. Smith needs to have more hoverboards.
Ugh. All right, so all right. What, 58 wins, 62 wins?
Yeah, 58.
Yay.
They're not going to push. They just won't.
The bigger question is, without Ryan Anderson, could the Pelicans take one game from them this year? Any chance?
Yes.
All right.
Because I'm sure LeBron James might sit one of them out. All right, so now we're going to talk Detroit Pistons, who you seem pretty high on. The Detroit Pistons and Stan Van Gundy, who always impresses whenever he does interviews. They lost Anthony Tolliver and Jody Meeks, which is pretty much not much and even less. And they brought in John Luer, Boban Marjanovic from the Spurs, our buddy Ish Smith. Ray McCallum gets yet another chance to stick in the NBA. And then they drafted Henry Ellenson, who I know absolutely jack about out of Marquette. That's pretty much the squad. The depth chart, so everybody hears it. Their starting lineup right now is Reggie Jackson, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Marcus Morris, probably, Tobias Harris and Andre Drummond. And then they have Baines and Marjanovic and John Luer and Stanley Johnson and Ish off the bench. Is there anybody you think I'm missing from this crew, or you think that's probably the most likely?
I think Stanley Johnson will either start at the beginning or eventually will. But, yeah.
I think that's why I was not sure about Marcus Morris. He started most of last year, and he'll probably – I don't know. I was impressed with Stanley last year, so – All right, so they basically, in a lot of respects, just filled in their awful bench. They had one of the worst benches around. And do you think that they basically have made it so that they're going to continue their upward trajectory?
I mean, they've got a lot of bigs that could. I mean, they're trying to do the magic thing. I think where they're kind of stuck is Caldwell Pope shoots like Redick 15 games a year, and then he shoots like Austin Rivers 60 games a year. So, like, he's the key to their team. Like, you show me his stat line, and I could tell you if Detroit has won or lost that game. He's just so up and down. But they have, you know, Tobias Harris, in some ways, he's Rashard Lewis-ish. He's not the playmaker, but he's kind of that hybrid forward. He could shoot from deep. He could also score in a multitude of ways. I like him a lot. They're obviously, with Luer and Ellenson, if you knew who Ellenson was, your evaluation for him would have been, you know, everybody's saying he could be like Ryan Anderson, but I'm looking at his numbers, and he did not shoot the ball that well from three. I'm not buying it. That was my Ryan Schwan impersonation. Thank you very much. But, yeah, Lore is a guy who's kind of a poor man's Ryan Anderson. So, I mean, to me, you tell me how KCP's season goes, if he takes another step or if he's still wildly inconsistent. And I think that's the difference between this being a 8 to 10 seed and a team that could be a surprising home court advantage third or fourth seed.
Yeah, and the interesting part about their team is they don't really have a backup shooting guard, really. Like, is Stanley Johnson going to play shooting guard for them? They've got Reggie Bullock now, but he has flamed out everywhere he's been.
Yeah, I think McCollum could play some in a small ball, but yeah, now they don't really have anybody that.
So they really are relying on Caldwell Pope to have a pretty massive season.
And they've invested money in three traditional centers who cannot play, and none of those three guys are playing power forward.
Yeah,
and they've put resources into all three of those guys, so they like playing big basketball. They like out-rebounding you. They like putting size on the court. This is a team that's kind of, you know, zigging a little bit while everybody else is zagging. So,
yeah, I mean, Aaron Baines, I think last year they put a lot of money into him, and he was what he was. He was a not-quite-up-to-snuff backup center. And now they realize that he wasn't the answer they hoped for, so they went and spent money on Marjanovic.
Yeah, I still think Baines will get more minutes than him, but I mean, listening to what Van Gundy said, was part of that thinking was, truth be told, it's hard to keep Drummond on the court in the final 2 minutes of games or, you know, in the hack of situations, and you had to invest a little bit of money into somebody else who could be at least a decent free throw shooter, which Baines is always somewhere between 75% and 80%. But Drummond, I mean, the guy is close to being a star, superstar, whatever. He shot 35% from the free throw line, and he takes 7 attempts per game. Basically, what you're doing, that's 2 turnovers a game. He's missing 4 free throws a game, which is almost like having 2 turnovers a game added onto your stat line. Like, that's just abysmal.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I remember when I used to love Ben Wallace, but every time you looked at his stat lines and what he was doing, and you just kind of choked on the 48% free throw line, I remember thinking, God, there can't be anyone who's actually this impactful to an NBA game who's going to shoot this badly again. Like, I was just, it was always shocking. And then here comes Drummond, who's somehow beating him. Like, that's insane. 36%. I can shoot better than that, and I suck. Like, I could never hit a free throw, and I'm convinced I could beat Andre Drummond in a free throw shooting percentage.
Let me ask you a question. What percentage of shots do you think from Drummond come inside of 3 feet?
80.
I would have thought that high too. It's only 60. So he's trying to expand his game to, I mean, he takes about 36% of his shots between 3 and 9 feet. He's trying to get some other things going.
Well, I guess his hooks. All of his little hook flip shots would be in that range, not within 3 feet. So
yeah.
Yeah, that's his post attempts.
Yeah.
How good is he at that?
Not great. I mean, he is what you think he would be. I mean, from that distance, he only shoots 40%.
Yeah.
So it's like it's you have this guy with these monster numbers, and he could put up huge games, but just so limited offensively, and he's by far your best player, but you don't know if you could play him at the end of games. It's just, you know, it's a weird situation to be in this NBA. I would love to see him go with the Malcolm Gladwell underhand free throw. He really has nothing to lose. He should be granny shotting it every time.
Absolutely.
At this point. But him and Jackson in the pick and roll when they're not in the penalty, you know, is a very dangerous combination. So I think they could be a good team. I don't know what you do those final couple of minutes in the game, but it's going to come down to that and what Kentavious Caldwell-Pope gives you on a day in, day out.
So let me ask you this question. This is something I like to do sometimes. 1.3 points per shot is essentially the superstar standard. That's where the scorers, as far as scorers go. Like, if you can score 1.3 points per shot or better, and players like Durant are like 1.4, 1.5, Davis is like 1.38, how many Detroit Pistons last year met the gold standard?
1.3?
Yep.
I would say the only guy who might have come close would have been Tobias Harris. I'm going to say 0 or 1.
It is 1, and it was Aaron Baines.
Oh.
All the rest of them are like there is no really superior efficient scorer on this team. And Drummond, it's almost solely because of his free throws. And, like, Jackson is not that good of a shooter overall, or finisher overall, and Harris is just kind of meh from the mid-range and doesn't get a lot of free throws. So,
yeah, but again, this is a team that's going to gobble up rebounds on the defensive end, so they're going to end possession, so they could be a decent defensive team.
Yeah. I think it was funny that Aaron Baines is their only efficient scorer. And, of course, he only took 4 shots a game.
Yeah.
So it's easy to dunk.
Yeah, but amongst their how many?
Their top 7 guys. The closest is Tobias Harris.
Yeah,
you're right.
That's what I thought.
And next would be Drummond. All right. Third highest paid player on the Detroit Pistons.
Oh, God. So
yeah, I got to think about this one for a second.
So did... What's-his-name's contract kick in this year?
Who's what's-his-name?
Andre Drummond, his contract starts... so then I would say John Wall's favorite, Reggie Jackson.
Yes, you are correct, sir. So it's Drummond, then Harris, and then Reggie Jackson.
Nice.
And then I would never have guessed. Who's the fourth highest? I had no idea.
So a lot of guys on rookie contracts. God, who's on their team? So Ish got 6. More. Ooh, John Lohr.
You're right. 10 or almost 11 million for John Lohr. I would not have guessed he made that big of a contract this year.
Yeah, I remember. Didn't he get like 3 for 30 or something?
Must have. Yeah, I think I somehow managed to not see John's contract. All right, so offensive efficiency, I am going to say that they are probably 13th in the league offensively, and defensively they are 10th. So what do you got?
Yeah, I think an improved bench and improved efficiency off the bench makes them a little better, so I'm going to go 8th offensively and 14th defensively.
Okay. Yeah. So, net, if you'd expect them to win, I guess in that situation, be right around 48 or 49 wins?
Yeah, I think that's realistic. I think it could be even higher. I won't stress it enough. Caldwell Pope is what it will all come down to this year for them.
All right. Okay, we got 2 more teams. The Indiana Pacers, which are a very fascinating crew. They basically have decided that they don't like running with traditional big men anymore, so they went entirely after a fast team, and then they brought in some traditional big men. And you'll see what I mean in just a moment. So it's just bizarre. They basically let George Hill, Ty Lawson, Jordan Hill, Solomon Hill, and Jan Mahinmi all walk over the summer. And they brought in Al Jefferson, Aaron Brooks, Kevin Serafin, and Jeff Teague, and Thaddeus Young. And I guess you'd also count Jeremy Evans, maybe. I'm not sure how much I still believe in his future to round out this team. They're... depth, so everybody knows kind of what they were looking at, is probably Jeff Teague, Monte Ellis, Paul George, Thaddeus Young, and I guess Miles Turner at center. Their backups are Rodney Stuckey, C.J. Miles, Al Jefferson, then I guess Lavoy Allen probably, and I guess they kind of liked Joe Young. Oh no, Joe Young got injured, so he's probably not starting. I have no idea who their backup point guard is. Glenn Robinson. He's not a point guard.
Aaron Brooks?
Yes, it's Aaron Brooks, but Aaron Brooks just feels like he's soon to be out of the league. I don't know.
Yeah, those kind of backup point guards make $8 million a year, though. So
it's true.
Yeah, I of all their pluses and minuses you just mentioned, I think the biggest one by far is minus Vogel, add Nate McMillan. I didn't get that at all. Can you explain to me why Larry Bird wanted more offense, more pace, and so what he does is he brings a guy who will give you neither of those in Nate McMillan, promotes him to be the head coach, and fires Vogel. Can you explain this?
So I cannot explain why he would pick Nate McMillan of his choices. That part makes no sense to me. I know why he fired Vogel, and that just goes back to his philosophy. Larry Bird is an obstinate SOB. I'm like, if you listen to him have any sort of interview on how he thinks about his team, he has very specific theories that he's come up with, and he sticks to them, and he really doesn't give a crap what anybody thinks about any of them. They're his theories, and they're his. And so he actually believes that after about 3 years, any NBA coach will be tuned out by his players and needs to be replaced. So the fact that Vogel lasted as long as he did is actually a little bit of a surprise. So I know why he got rid of Vogel. I just don't know why you would pick Nate McMillan. Like, he's on the same staff, so you're not really changing the sound bites.
Yeah.
So I can't figure out. Maybe he just really respects Nate McMillan and thinks McMillan deserves another shot. Maybe.
Yeah. No, I mean, if you were going to go with that philosophy, just go all in and go get Mike D'Antoni and, you know, rely on the fact that you already have a culture of defense and maybe D'Antoni can improve the odd. Like, that I wouldn't have agreed with, but I would have understood. I did not understand the Nate McMillan hiring. So for almost that reason, a lot, like, again, this is another roster I look at and go, okay, there's a lot of players that I wouldn't mind playing on my favorite team in a certain role. I just don't like the way it's constructed with Nate McMillan at the helm. I'm not as excited about this team as you probably. I remember right after the Jeff Teague and Thaddeus Young trades right before the draft, people would put up their starting lineup in Twitter and be like, this is a definite league pass team and they should be good. I'm not as excited as those Twitter people.
Honestly, I'm actually, we just talked a little bit about Chicago and the kind of players they had and how they don't really fit together. So where is the floor spacing coming from a starting lineup that has Teague, Ellis, George, Young, and Turner in it? And so, and what we did with the Chicago team is we're like, oh, we just went to the bench and we grabbed McDermott off of it. Or we grab, you know, I forget the other guy. There's another person, Mirotić off of it. And we provide some stretch floor spacing. And that's vital for a team that gets up and down the court and then tries to do a spread pick and roll. Who on this team is like, there isn't even a guy off the bench. Like, CJ Miles is okay as a 3-point shooter. Okay. That's it. Jefferson's not doing it for you. Allen's not doing it. Stuckey, no. Young, no. Like, this team has literally no shooting. Paul George is their best shooter, and he will have the ball in his hands all the time, too. It's a terrible mix offensively.
Yeah, I think Jeff Teague is coming from, you know, a much more disciplined system, a much more ball-moving system, and I think he was a more of a product of that system. I think he'll decline this year. I think he'll be frustrated. I'm not a big fan of this team, even though in its starting lineup you have four guys who are NBA names and a fifth guy in Miles Turner, who a lot of people are excited about being, you know, the next era of kind of this stretch center. I'm not as excited by this team as their names would have you think.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk offensive, defensive efficiency impacts. A team that starts those five guys and has backups like experienced backups like Stuckey and Lavoy Allen, they still have Al Jefferson now as their backup center. Like, Is there any chance that they have a strong defense? Just on the backs of George and Young and...
If Vogel were still there... No, I don't. I don't think... I think it would be very hard for them to be league average. I think they'll allow very few points per game because McMillan's going to play at a terribly slow pace. But as far as efficiency, no, I don't think they're going to be in the top half of the league.
Yeah, I mean, because here's the thing that people forget. They have a young, exciting center in Miles Turner. Great. He can turn out to be something pretty special. And I know a lot of people are super excited about him, and I think he's fine. Jan Mihimi was a really, really good breakout defensive center last year. The guy was mobile. He could shut down pick and rolls, even if he had to go out and guard the, like on the perimeter and cover guys. He was really good. And they basically traded that guy, or let him walk, and they're replacing him with a second-year center who was awful defensively last year. And Al Jefferson, who has one time been part of a plus defense where he played a major role in it in his entire career. And now he's 34, I think. There's no way. They got rid of the most important position. Center is the most important position defensively, and they emptied it. So I am fully expecting that this team will be falling into like the 18 to 20 range defensively. And I think their offense,
they,
sure.
You go in and it's going to be say Langston Galloway and Etuan Moore going up against their two guards.
Tegan.
We're playing them that night. Do you say that Indiana definitely wins that matchup?
I would draw.
Yeah, me too. I just think those two are a terrible match. Obviously neither one of them is going to bring anything special defensively. And offensively, again, they're the guys who need the ball in their hands. And I don't know how much it's going to be in their hands with Paul George on the team. I don't get the way that this team is built, and I maybe could buy into it with a different coach, but not with McMillan. The best thing McMillan ever did as a coach was he had some pretty creative defensive schemes. He was a guy who really instituted all this Golden State Warriors where you see switch in multiple positions, McMillan was a big part of that years and years ago. I don't think he has the horses to have a great defense, though. I think it's a bad fit with the coach and the personnel. I think they're going to, well, most people think are going to underachieve. What's their Vegas over-under? Do you have any idea?
I don't. I thought it was like 37.
What would you guess it is?
37. So who is the second highest paid player on the Indiana Pacers?
Huh. All right, so Paul George is going to be number one.
Mm-hmm.
Let me go with Thaddeus Young.
Yes, you are correct.
Who's third?
That's very difficult because there are two players within 500K of each other.
So, it's got to be the two guards, right?
It's Monte Ellis, Al Jefferson. They gave him a $10.5 million contract.
Why? Who was offering him
$9.5 million?
I don't understand.
Yeah, Jeff Teague, remember, he signed that really reasonable contract for long-term from Atlanta. He's only making $9 million.
All these teams are like that chick in Groundhog Day at the end when like Bill Murray's in the auction and he's going for like 35, 40, and then she pulls out her checkbook and she's like $262, because that's the exact amount that she has in her checkbook, even though she's got to go back the next day through a possible storm and get all the way home. Like, she's going to empty her checkbook, but that's a different story. But like, they all bid like she's bid, like why are these teams paying what they pay? All right, that's enough. What's a Nick Zeisloft?
He's on the team.
What is it? Oh, that's a person? A Nick Zarzlov?
I believe so.
Did he go to a school? I never even heard of this guy.
I have honestly no idea. His college is Indiana, they say.
Huh.
He went to Indiana.
I never saw the Zarzlov play.
You're going to have to look up and watch some YouTube highlight clips. I'm sure there's got to be some, right?
Yeah, I just want to see Alex Poitras make this. I remember that guy for years was going to be a top 10 pick and just
and never made
terrible
it.
Terrible luck with injuries. But yeah, so my ratings, I say offense is going to be somewhere around 22, defense somewhere between 24 and 27. This is a team that I think I like a lot less than most other people do.
Wow, I would have left their defense still in the like bottom ends of the teens, but their offense like at 24. And I keep looking at saying, well, Paul George is on this team, but at some point he's just going to give up. I'm guessing 30 wins for them.
Yeah, I'm going to go with 26.
Wow, you really don't like them.
I don't get what they did, and I hope. I've been reading, I went back reading it for the second time, the Larry Bird and Magic Johnson book by Jackie McMullen.
Yeah.
Great book, but what you're saying about Bird is right. He's just a stubborn SOB, and I think this one is going to come back to bite him.
Yeah. Okay. Last team on our list, the Milwaukee Bucks. They basically let...
Hold on one second.
Sure.
Indiana is at 43.5 on their over-under in Vegas.
Are you kidding me?
No. People pound the under.
That's nuts.
If you don't listen to anything else from this podcast, if you get 43.5, please pound that under. Wow. Okay. Sorry, okay. I just had to. That's insane. 43.5. Okay, go ahead.
They are in the East.
That's another thing. Can we please stop saying this East-West thing like it's 3 years ago? The East is pretty much comparable, if not better.
Yeah, it basically the league has even more shifted towards a few top-heavy teams, and then everybody else is in the East. And that's something you brought up before the podcast. I wanted to mention it really quick, too. I mean, you were basically saying before the podcast, when we're talking about this division and the previous division, every single year it used to be there was three or four teams that were deliberately trying to be as bad as possible. Like, it wasn't that they were just lucking into badness. They were deliberately tanking and trying to be as bad as they possibly can. Other than Philly, which is actually trying to make some moves towards respectability that has been a little derailed by the Ben Simmons thing. They're trying to make some moves towards respectability. Is there any other team in this league that's trying flat out to be bad?
I don't see one. I really don't. I mean, the Lakers probably don't have their pick, so they're not trying. Like, I don't think anybody else is trying to be bad this year.
I mean, the Nets don't want to be bad. They're going to be. They don't want to be bad.
Yeah.
The Phoenix Suns, like, in some respects, they drafted some young guys, so they probably don't expect a leap, but they still have some very solid veteran players.
Yeah. No, I think there might be some teams, you know, halfway through the year who start selling once things go bad. But as of right now, I would say 28 out of the 30 teams outside of Philly and New Jersey, they're going in saying, all right, let's try to make or get close to the playoffs this year.
Wow. Okay. So it's going to be that means it's more of a dogfight. That's just the reality. Like, if teams are not trying to be awful, you don't have any complete cupcake schedules. Milwaukee Bucks, let's get rolling here. They basically lost Jared Bayless. They lost Gravis Vasquez, who didn't really play for them because he got injured. OJ Mayo was banned from the NBA for drug related thing for 2 years. Just kind of blows my mind. And then they added Thon Maker in the draft. They brought back Miles Plumlee, and they brought in Mirza Teletovic, and for some reason Jason Terry, who shouldn't be in the league anymore. And then when the big news broke when Chris Middleton is essentially done for, I think it's 6 months, so he's not coming back until March. They went and traded for Michael Beasley. So they still have a pretty solid, like, you look at their roster and you're like, oh, that guy's good. Oh, that guy's good. And so their depth chart, in my world, is Dellavedova will start over Michael Carter-Williams. So Dellavedova, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Jabari Parker, Mirza Teletovic, Greg Monroe as their starting five. And then they have John Henson, they have Terry and Beasley, and I guess Thon Maker. I guess I always forgot the Plumlee. Plumlee as their backups. Chris Middleton being out just completely obliterates any ability this team has to have a reasonable set of guards.
Yeah, because I don't mind Antetokounmpo at shooting guard. It doesn't really matter what quote-unquote position he's going to play. But you cannot play Jabari Parker at small forward. Like, you'll just get eaten alive, especially...
You think he's that bad there?
Yeah, yeah, especially okay. With Greg Monroe as your rim protector. I mean, I would say Parker's foot speed is 5 to 10% better than Ryan Anderson.
Wow.
So you put him at small forward, I think you're in for...
So if Jabari Parker ended up with Ryan Anderson's career, would that shock you?
I think it would be an under... I mean, I remember him as a prospect. I mean, this was a guy that was going to be superstar level. Yeah, I think... I mean, even coming out, his NBA comparison was... A lot of people were saying his ceiling was Melo. So, yeah, I think that would be pretty disappointing. I don't think he's a bad player. I just think he's strictly a power forward in today's NBA. You can't put him at small forward. So that's just really going to hurt him if they're kind of forced to do that. I think it's more likely. I would feel more comfortable with Beasley at small forward than Parker. That's how bad it is. But
even though Beasley's a tire fire.
Yeah, and... It's a shame because if Parker...
Teletovic isn't the... Like, I don't...
It's a shame because if Parker went down, like, if he was able to move down to small forward, they have a lot of guys that I think could play power forward. I think Teletovic, I think Henson, I think you could play Plumlee and Monroe together, so one of them...
Could you play Henson at small forward? He's got more foot speed than normal.
Yeah, I mean, then your spacing is absolutely... Who's your...
Yeah,
Dellavedova is your best 3-point.
I'm just trying to come up with something here.
Yeah, no, that Middleton injury. There's some guys who might not be the best player on their team, but it's the hardest to replace. Like, I was going to actually ask you this. So, we're all assuming, I think, that the Pelicans are not going to have another injury. Like, we're already so grief stricken, but we saw this last year where the injuries piled up. In the preseason as well, who would you, if you had the cloak of Thimbledore, which is the cloak in Dungeons of Dragons that allows you to not get perished or injured, if you had the cloak of Thimbledore, who would you put it on for the Pelicans, other than Anthony Davis, of course, to ensure that they do not get injured between now and the 1st of January?
Can I put it on Drew Holiday?
No.
He's already injured, essentially.
Yeah, he's away. So,
I can't put it on him.
Tyreek or Coupon or Drew. Just to the guys we have right now, who would make you scream in most agony if you got a report from Jim Eifenhauer that this guy was out 4 to 6 weeks, other than AD?
I'm torn between three different guys.
Who are?
I'm torn between Frazier, because he's the only true point guard we have left, Etuan Moore, because I think he's the most versatile wing guy, and Hill, because we have no small forwards to speak of at all.
Right, so like two of those guys you mentioned are definitely not the second best player, but they might be the second most valuable. And I think that's the same thing here with middle. I think the two guys they couldn't afford to go down are Middleton and Antetokounmpo. I think anybody else goes down, and you have a backup that's just as good, if not better, ready to step in. Middleton going down was just...
Especially with Mayo being banned.
I mean, maybe Malcolm Brogdon could pull a... You know, he could be this year's second-round pick who just comes in. And I mean, he was ACC Player of the Year, a tremendous defender who could shoot the three. Maybe he could exceed expectations, but, you know, Rashad Vaughn, who was a first-round pick, what, a year or two ago? Yeah, that was just – that. I think that was a terrible injury for them.
Yeah. But so even if he was there, Middleton was their starting shooting guard, you're still talking about Giannis and Jabari as their forwards, probably Monroe or maybe Miles Plumlee as their starting center, Dellavedova or Carter Williams is a point. There's still no shooting on this team. Absolutely none, except for Middleton.
Teletovic.
Yeah, Teletovic is broad. Yeah.
So you can shift him in. They got a bunch of...
Yeah, Novak's not playing. don't tease anyone that they might get to see Steve Novak out there. Like, he's not a viable NBA player.
Is Baker
he's...
crossing over and raining threes in summer league? You don't think that'll translate?
No. That's just it is a very poorly constructed team to begin with, and you're right. The one player they could least afford to lose. And I'll be honest, like last year, I don't know who was a better player, Chris Middleton or Giannis, just in what they did last year. It might have been Chris was their best player. I don't think that's going to be the case going forward over the next 4 or 5 years, but he's that impactful.
Yeah. No, he was a top three defensive shooting guard and probably top 5 to 6 offensive shooting guard. If he was on a team that got more exposure, he would be a big... I mean, he's...
Is there much difference between him and Jimmy Butler in reality?
Just because of their styles of games, yeah, but the one that I would actually say that if you would have switched places with the two guys 3 years ago and then watched their trajectory take off, I think him and Klay Thompson could have switched places and he could have had the same type of trajectory and career that Klay Thompson had.
Yeah.
Very similar, great defensive wing who could shoot the heck out of the ball. Just was never obviously in a system or had a guy like Steph that he was playing with, but a lot of the same skill sets as a Klay Thompson.
Come on, Michael Carter-Williams was Rookie of the Year.
Oh, God. A terrible draft, and yeah, he racked up. I mean, look at the numbers Isaiah Cannon put up on Philly. Like, anybody who puts up any numbers on Philly should be automatically disqualified for any award.
If Smith came and turned them around, he let them win 12 games.
Isaiah Cannon looks like put up monster numbers. Like, he put up great numbers on a terrible team. But
all right, so I can't walk away from Milwaukee without asking you this question. If they called up and offered Greg Monroe to you for absolutely nothing, like Tyreek Evans' contract and some sort of hot garbage, would you take Greg Monroe?
The only one I would consider would be Omer, to get rid of Omer, hoping that Monroe opted out. But unless they're taking a Sheik back, I wouldn't say yes, because the only way I'm playing Monroe is off the bench in that Enes Kanter role I talked about, and then I would want him gone next year. So. Unless they're
he had a 22 PER last year.
Yeah, unless they're 22. Taking it back, unless they're taking back Asik, the answer is no. But once they agree to take him, then yeah, sure, I'll take him for a year.
All right, so this team still has the potential to be a defensive team, though. So let me ask you the questions. What is your offensive and defensive predictions for the Milwaukee Bucks?
Offensive rating 27. Defensive 13.
Okay. If Chris Middleton played the whole season, what would that defensive rating have been?
6 or 7.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was thinking too. All right. So I'm actually going to say their offensive rating is better than you. I think that they are actually going to be able to score just not badly. I think they're probably going to be about 20. Their defense, I'm at 12. So. I guess I am predicting something like 38 wins for them, 39 wins.
Yeah, I'll go 33, 34. It would have been closer to 500 with Middleton.
Okay. And who is the second highest paid player on the Milwaukee Bucks?
Did Antetokounmpo's 4-year, 100-year, that's not kicked in yet, is it?
It's not kicked. It's an extension after this year, I believe.
Okay.
So yeah, it's after this year.
I am going to go with... I'm going to go with Monroe.
So Monroe is their highest paid player.
Wait, what did Middleton get? Didn't he get...
So Chris Middleton is at 15-2 and Monroe is at 17.
Wow, Middleton... Oh, yeah, didn't he get like 5 years, 85?
Yeah,
yeah, but he did it the year before the...
That's right.
Yeah.
And, but here's the really difficult one. Who do you think's the third?
Dellavedova?
Yeah, I would have guessed Dellavedova as well.
Toledovich?
He's sixth.
Whoa, who's third?
John Henson.
Oh, they handed out stupid extensions. Didn't they extend him and Plumlee?
Yeah, they gave him and Plumlee. Both him and Plumlee are at 12.5. Teletovic is at 10.5, and Dellavedova is at 9.5.
How much would somebody have to pay you to live in Milwaukee?
And then Jabari Parker is coming up on needing an extension pretty soon, and Giannis just got his monster extension. Like, I don't know what you're going to do with this roster when all those guys are making all that money.
True story, my stepdad went to a bar in Milwaukee, and he got, like, a beer, and he paid for it with a 20, and everybody in that bar turned around like they thought he was Donald Trump just because he flashed a 20, and it got so unnerving for him that by the end of the beer, he had to show his gun just to make sure that people knew not to follow him out back and rob. Like, a $20 bill at this bar in Milwaukee.
Come on. Milwaukee's not that bad.
I'm telling you this happened. This was his story, and he was...
I think you might be telling me more about your father.
This was the ex-stepdad, but no, okay. Yeah, he was kind of shook by it, but that's the one experience I have with outside family members in Milwaukee. So,
okay, yeah, I can't say I've ever been to Milwaukee, though I've been to some towns near there.
The hottest girl from the real world, in my opinion, ever was from Milwaukee. That's the only other factoid I got. Forget her name; she was a tall blonde, really annoying, but she's hot.
Yeah, there are some pretty hot, really annoying people on some of the later seasons of The Real World. All right, so we made our predictions. That's the last of our season previews, and we will be coming back with just all Pelicans coverage from now on as more and more of these preseason games roll on, and hopefully we'll have no injury news whatsoever.
And since we're done with the previews, I'm going to go out on a limb and say Cleveland Golden State? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean... Have you ever had a more feeling like things are set in stone than this season?
No, I would give it less than a 10% chance. Like the field has less than a 10% chance than Cleveland Golden State.
It's nuts.
Stupid.
All right. Thanks everyone for listening to In the Know, and we'll be back later.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's UNIFYDHealing.com/BlueWire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.